Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Here, our waters are splashing and rejuvenating. Our history is for seeing and experiencing. Our theme parks are for riding and sometimes flying. And our great outdoors are yours for exploring and restoring. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
To get the Crime Writers on After Show right now, go to patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia.
I'm Rebecca Lavoy, and this is Crime Writers On. Crime Writers On is the original true crime review podcast that digs into true crime, pop culture, other podcasts, and on this episode, he made a fortune getting young women to flash the camera. But things took a turn when an armed stranger broke into his house. We'll talk about the new podcast, Infamous, Girls Gone Wild. Joining me to get that done and more is true crime author, TV journalist, and host of the These Are Their Stories podcast, my husband, my own boy gone wild, Kevin Flynn. Hello, Kevin.
Does this mean I got to show you my nipples?
No.
Because all you got to do is ask, Rebecca. Look at.
No.
I'm wearing a shirt underneath.
We're on Zoom with our friends. That was a workplace violation, Kevin.
You're not even getting a tank top.
Yeah, nothing.
Also with us is private investigator, certified pet detective, resident cat lady, and author of the Piper Green series of cozy mysteries, Laura Bricker. Hello, Laura.
Hello. Maybe it's time for Piper Green to go wild.
Maybe.
Book three.
I hope Piper Green is a better detective than you are, because do you remember the last episode we were talking about White Lotus, and you were hoping that Jake Lacey's character was in the body bag?
Yeah.
But we saw Jake Lacey at the airport waiting for the body bag.
Yeah, I was like,
I just hated him.
Yeah,
I hated him so much.
He was pretty hateable.
Yeah. Piper.
And finally, our resident Doubting Thomas, author of the City Trilogy of Novels, host of the Strange Arrivals podcast, and our Patreon Deep Dive Book Club podcast host, Toby Ball. Hello, Toby.
Hello, Rebecca.
So, Kevin, remember in White Lotus season one, Armand, the concierge?
Yeah.
At the hotel. Do you remember when we were at Podcast Movement and there was this guy who looked fucking exactly like Armand from White Lotus?
Yeah, because he had a mustache and a Hawaiian flower shirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Laura, I kept doing that thing where I kept trying to pose as for a photo so Kevin could take a photo of him behind me. And he kept... And this dude was so spry that he kept like getting out of the frame too quickly, and we were never able to chase him down. And I kept saying to people, like, have you seen the White Lotus guy? And everyone knew who I was talking about.
Oh.
This guy looked exactly like fucking Murphy.
So, you know what I do is I prop my phone in such a way that then I open the camera app on my watch and I click pictures when I want a picture in that situation.
Genius.
Ah.
Genius. But we're actually watching something for this show that same actor is in, right?
Murray Bartlett is in Welcome to Chippendales.
And he is...
Which is what we'll be talking about on Monday.
Yeah, and he's a chameleon because I did not recognize him. That dude is a freaking chameleon.
Well, apparently once you shave your mustache off, you can just kind of blend in.
And you can do an American accent really well.
Yeah.
Unlike other people from Australia who can't. But he's not one of those because he can do it really well. Yeah. I'm very proud of him. All right. So, Kevin,
he's thrilled you're proud of him.
I am very proud of him. I'm also very... Any actor who can be like a super chameleon like that, like Sam Rockwell, like you just don't recognize in things, is incredible. So, as you mentioned, Kevin, on Monday's show, we're talking about Welcome to Chippendales.
That's right.
And that's the thing that people need to know before we talk about...
That's what they need to know.
This topic?
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Okay. Well, it's time for us to talk about the thing we're talking about. So let's get to it.
Instead of boys gone wild, we're going to talk about girls gone wild.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second, okay?
All right.
I'm going to drop that first clip right now.
Hey, Mom, you know that Girls Gone Wild thing? He's going to give me a t-shirt that says Girls Gone Wild if I take off my swimming suit top. Is that okay with you? I love you.
Show your tits! Show your tits! Show your tits!
Joe Francis made a fortune on a simple concept. Get drunken young women to flash the camera for his direct-to-DVD series, Girls Gone Wild. When the filming stopped, the debauchery continued as Francis allegedly coerced sex from the women, some of whom were underage.
Joe is leading them into the other room right now.
Come on, sit down over here.
He gestures to the bed next to him, and once again, he takes their hands. Now, you can probably imagine what happens next.
Local authorities wanted to protect the victims and put a stop to the filming. Francis remained defiant until the night an armed man broke into his Bel Air home to give him a taste of his own medicine.
He's come prepared with a gun. He's got a video camera. He's gonna make Joe Francis lay face down in bed, and he's gonna make him say these words.
My name is Joe Francis. I'm a boy gone wild, and I like it up the ass.
In the five-part podcast, Infamous Girls Gone Wild, host Vanessa Gregoriadis recounts her early days covering Francis for Rolling Stone and the legal troubles Francis would later find himself in. It's part profile of a vile libertine and part commentary on what constitutes exploitation. Spoiler alert, we are going to be talking about plot points from Infamous Girls Gone Wild. So if you want to remain spoiler-free, go to the estimated time code in our show notes to hear our thumbs up or thumbs down reviews. Now, Kevin, we should mention that it's clear from listening to this podcast that it originally had a different title because Vanessa says the series Boy Gone Wild, even though the podcast is called Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
So that's just something I just wanted to mention because it's like it may have come up in an index somewhere else as Boy Gone Wild.
It's a little hard to find.
Yeah.
If you search, because there are some other podcasts with the same name. So you have to look under the Infamous, you know, subject line to get to this one.
Correct. And I actually do like the idea of the show. Toby, this is a series now where we have been told very transparently, this is not going to be a thing where there are going to be seasons of like that come out, you know, every year. You know, there's going to be a 12 episode thing. It's a series called Infamous. Well, there will be stories in it. And apparently the stories do not have to be a particular length of 10 or 12 episodes because this one was pretty short. What do you think of that concept?
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I mean, I think this series is as long as it needs to be. I think if it was taken out to like 8, 10, 12 episodes, that would be more Joe Francis than I feel like I need to know about. So, yeah, no, I think it's good. I think it's good to be flexible like that. I think there are reasons why companies generally don't do that, but I think it works in this case.
So, Laura, what do you think of the opening scene of this podcast?
I'm here for it after that opening scene. So I will describe. So, you know, Girls Gone Wild is from what we're going to refer to as like the raunchy era. And like we get that right off the bat with the scene where somebody is breaking into Joe Francis's house, tying him up, stripping him naked and saying he's going to like stick a rabbit vibrator up his bum. So right from the beginning, we know that somebody is metering out some of their own justice on Joe Francis and putting him in the same position that these young women were put in.
Riley's looking for tape recordings of Girls Gone Wild that Joe might have in his safe.
Crazy enough, the smaller of the safes was open, so I don't have to fidget with it and try to come up with a combination. I open it. There's a couple of tapes in there, mini DV tapes. I'll take those with me, put those in the bag.
Hearing that right off the top, I'm like, oh my gosh, is somebody going to get arrested for doing this? Did he really put it in there? What happened to this video? Who did this? Like, I immediately just was all in on this podcast as I was listening to this opening scene.
What did you think about that, Kevin?
Yeah, I also love the opening scene and how it gets resolved later on. I think it's episode 3. I think one of the things by setting this up as the first thing we hear is that it lets the listener know that this story is not going to be just about boobs and courtrooms, right? There are other interesting things that are going on with this story. You're like, oh, this isn't what I thought the story was going to be. And, you know, the thing about like this extortion tape that he's trying to make, the significant thing isn't, you know, the homophobic vibrator aspect, although that is important. It's the complete humiliation that Joe faces. This is the thing that he wants to do. It's all about his lack of informed consent and his helplessness It's a great comeuppance for Joe Francis, but unfortunately, he doesn't learn the lesson.
I have a question. Do we ever really find out what was really behind this incident? Because it sounds like, did Riley Perez really work alone on this? Because it sounds sort of like someone sent him, right?
Someone said, yeah, didn't someone send him for the videos?
Yes.
For a video of somebody, yeah.
Yeah, and but that's not really fully, like, is that a mystery that's still kind of unresolved? It's interesting to me. Don't you also want to know what the fuck Joe Francis did to Muhammad? That yes. He so strongly believes that Muhammad was the one who sent him? It's like, what did you do to Muhammad? Why do you so strongly believe that Muhammad is the one who sent you? I'm like, why do you think that? That's a podcast that I maybe one addendum I want to hear about. So, Toby, you sent me a note that you said what you like about the podcast is that you think it has a quirky vision behind it. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was listening to this. You know, sometimes you hear about like movie directors who have to like direct a blockbuster so they can then finance like their passion project, which is usually like a smaller, quirkier thing. And this kind of feels like one of those kind of passion projects. I don't know. I mean, I was just listening to it. It's not set up in a normal way that I guess I've come to be used to hearing podcasts. I mean, it essentially, like, there's two pretty short episodes in the middle that deal with this whole thing with Riley Perez breaking into Joe Francis' house and all this stuff. And then it's kind of bookended by who Joe Francis is and kind of like what happened to him and where he is now. It's sort of this little jumble of things, like a lot of contextualizing this one little event that happens. But I thought the whole thing was interesting. Like when you asked about, you know, what do you think about having it'd be five episodes. It's like, yeah, five episodes is perfect. One of the episodes I think is like 20 minutes long.
Yep.
So it's just measured, right? I mean, I think she's figured out how long you can have these things and have it be interesting. And then at the point at which it's going to cease to be interesting, it just ends, right? So I thought that was good. And Joe Francis, for all his sort of like ubiquity after 1 o'clock in the morning on cable television, you know, 20 years ago, he's not really that interesting a dude. He's just a guy who had this shitty, stupid idea and was able to sell a bunch of videotapes to horny guys who are watching cable in the middle of the night. But he's a prick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he made his money off of exploiting drunk young women. I mean, I think part of the attraction of those videotapes for some people was the fact that these girls are humiliated. They're going to wake up with major, major regrets. And he's like, well, if they asked me to take them off to not like put the videos out, I wouldn't have done it. It's like, well, who the fuck's going to do that? The whole thing is really super seamy. So anyway, I like the fact that it didn't have to fit into these sort of models that we already have set up. And it just seemed like it was kind of like she had a vision, she put it out there, and I think it works.
I like it too. I mean, the formatics are what they are, and I wish more, you know, the only other like podcast company that I feel that is allowed to break from regular formatics regularly is like Pineapple Street or the people that run it, like Max Linsky will just put out something as a passion project like he did 70 over 70 that's like an episode can be however long he wants it to be. Guess what? You can still sell ads in a 20-minute podcast because you can put a break wherever the fuck you want to put it. Like, there's a lot of tolerance for that with listeners. If you listen to a Wondery show, they have a break after 4 minutes, right? So, like, you can have a 20-minute episode. You can have five episodes. If there's going to be a series with two hosts and you're going to be doing continuous reporting, like, why not? And I actually think it's a really good idea, too. I have a question for you, Laura, because one thing that we hear in the podcast that really stuck out to me, and they do address it somewhat, but I really wanted, the one thing I wish they had dug into a little bit more with the Rolling Stone editor was, and they do address it. I don't want to say somewhat because they do address it, but the Rolling Stone editor sends her on this assignment because she's like, he's going to fall in love with you. So he'll be open with you. Like, you're a woman journalist. Have you ever gotten assignments just because you were a woman? And it was like, you look back on that now and you're like, that's fucking fucked up because.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Early in my career. I mean, not so much now, but when I was an intern even, and in hindsight, and I wrote about this in my paper for my internship, my final paper, I got sent to cover this little town where the police chief really loved young women. And so I went out there because he would tell me all the stories. And that was specifically why I was assigned to cover that town. And in hindsight, I'm like, really? I mean, I'm somebody that's just creative about getting people to talk to me and keeping after them and I guess whatever works. But in that case, that's a little bit icky, you know? And I think we've come a long way since then. And that was early. I mean, this was how many years ago that she was having lunch with this editor and he was talking about the need to send, you know, send her in and all of that. But it definitely is something that used to happen. And I think there are, I'm sure, situations where female journalists laid that up to get the story.
Absolutely, you know? Still happens.
I can't say.
No, I don't know if female journalists play it up, but it absolutely still happens that women journalists are assigned certain kinds of stories because they're women, or they're assigned to cover certain sources because they're women. What are you going
to
say, Kevin?
Well, first I wanted to ask Laura if she has to like wear a tight sweater while working for Chronicle of the Horse. That gets you any...
Because the horses stuff. Really like it.
The horses love it.
Yes.
I really enjoyed Vanessa's sort of reflection on this. She tells the story in episode one, but kind of moves on to it and then like really digs into it back in episode five. So basically she put a pin in it. But this whole idea that in order to do this interview, she had to show up and then like put on a bathing suit and go talk to him.
I told myself I was an analyst of all this stuff. And in some ways I was. But in my haste to become successful myself, to become a female Hunter Thompson who got into the seamy side of culture, I did a lot of stuff that I feel pretty weird about today.
A male reporter would never do that because it would not be expected of him. Probably they would also treat in this particular situation a male reporter differently because it's like, come on, you're going to be one of the buddies and we're going to go along. And she was put in a position where she had to kind of sex herself up a little bit in order to get into that.
It was a one piece. Come on, Kim.
It was a one. Right. No, it was a one piece. And she specified that. But again, there was sort of an expectation that she needed to dress the part to get this particular interview. And she addresses that later on. She's thinking about that. Was she taken advantage of, or was she, you know, going along because this is, you know, was she taking advantage of the situation too? And I thought that was really great. I think that's one of the things that she brings to telling the story is that we don't have a lot of first person tape because we don't hear from Joe. So a lot of it is like her recollections of this. And it's almost not so much about Joe's story. In some cases, it's about Vanessa covering Joe's story. And so that her insights and her reflections become the more valuable for it.
All right, so Kevin, we're going to get back to this conversation in just a second.
Yeah.
A little bit more Girls Gone Wild. But before we do that, we got to cover some business. What's going on our Patreon right now?
Well, I'm not going to tell you until you get into a bathing suit.
Okay, that's not fair. That's kind of sexist, don't you think?
Well, that's how we run things here at Partners in Crime Media.
Oh, God.
It's just Crime Writers Gone Wild.
Okay.
I mean, Kevin, how many times has Kevin not worn pants
that's
in that
true.
Studio?
That's true.
Don't objectify me.
That's true.
Winnie the Pooh. Right now on Patreon, you can get over 320 exclusive podcasts, including Toby Ball's Deep Dive Book Club podcast.
It's deep. It's a deep dive.
Toby is going to be talking about on the next podcast, The Premonitions Bureau. Toby, who's your guest?
I have Deb Shudica and Shirley Leroux and Julia Lowry Henderson.
Okay, can I just say something about Shirley Leroux? That's fucking awesome, Dr. All right. Leroux. She has started this like email book club situation, which I love. Like we both recently read, and she initiated it, the latest Anthony Horowitz Hawthorne book.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent an email to me and Janet, and I think you were on it, Toby, but you didn't.
I haven't read the book, yeah.
She sent an email with her thoughts about the book to all of us.
And unsolicited?
It started this like email chain, like book club situation. So we basically have an email book club. It is fucking awesome. Thank you, Dr. Shirley. I really appreciate it. What else we got going on, Kevin?
Coming up on December 20th, it's going to be the Crime Writers on Patreon holiday party.
Yay!
Second annual. So we're going to go on to Crowdcast with all of our patrons who want to join us. Bring your eggnog, your other festive drinks, bring your mistletoe. We'll be on for an hour or so talking to folks, wishing them Merry Christmas. And talking about
Happy New Year, holidays. There are other holidays besides Christmas, Kevin. Happy Hanukkah.
No need to be offended.
Happy Kwanzaa.
I'm just reminding you, your like Christian-centric worldview isn't the only one, Kevin.
Also, yesterday we had the latest episode of These Are Their Stories podcast. Ooh. We covered a classic SVU episode. It's the one with Mike Tyson on death row.
Yeah.
And his horrible acting.
I thought he was good in that episode.
I don't remember him being good in that episode.
I don't think he should have been cast.
Andre Brower was excellent as a guest star in that episode.
I don't think Mike Tyson should have been cast on SVU, but I do think he was good in the episode.
Yeah, it was called Monster's Legacy. Also, you got to listen in because I have a mind-blowing fact about the title. Actually, the titles for many of the shows from season 13 on, you'll never believe it.
Yes. And can I just say something that we did not mention about last week's after show, which should be incentivized for people to join Patreon?
Yeah.
I dropped a mind-blowing fact about our favorite Pearl Jam song, Yellow Ledbetter, in last week's after show that people should join Patreon just to hear that mind-blowing fact. Right, Kevin?
Absolutely.
Yes. So join Patreon just to hear last week's after show so you can hear the mind-blowing fact that I dropped on Laura and Toby about the famous song, Yellow Ledbetter by Pearl Jam, which we have previously discussed on this show. All right, so Kevin, before we end the business section, do we have any Patreon patron saints of the week this week?
Our Patreon patron saints are Donna Cashman and Barbara Baldwin. Bless you.
Bless you, Donna and Barbara. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this business section, supporting us on Patreon, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to go ahead and fade that music out.
Fade it out.
Right now.
Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Scramble through our world-class golf courses or shop your way through the square. Be one with nature as you hike or bike through our parks and trails or hunker down at one of our breweries. And when it's time to eat, be sure to bite into our eclectic food scene. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
Hi, I'm Ariana Maddox. You probably know me from TV, or maybe you read my best-selling book and tried one of my amazing cocktails, or maybe you saw me on Broadway. What I can say is following dreams is kind of my thing, but of all the things I'm lucky enough to get to do, the thing that I get asked about the most are my shoes. What's my secret? DSW. DSW is the best place to get all the shoes you need from brands you love. Trust me, I'm obsessed. In fact, I love DSW so much, I've teamed up with them to create a collection of shoes from must-have sandals to super cool sneakers that are guaranteed to get compliments. Because if I've learned anything, it's that if you've got big dreams to follow, you're going to need some really great shoes. Find the shoes of your dreams when you shop my new collection now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
So, Kevin, you thought this show could have benefited from better quality sound design?
Yeah, better quality is always better, and that's why I like to shop at Quince.
Ooh, Quince!
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. So all Quince items are like priced about 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they partner directly with top factories. So you know what they do? They cut out the middleman and pass the savings on to us.
Why are you talking about this and not me? This is literally one of my favorite places to shop. Okay. I love Quince.
You know who else loves it? It's Laura Bricker. Laura, tell us about the last thing that you got from Quince.
I got my most favorite new prized possession from Quince. I got this really nice black motorcycle jacket, and I am looking forward to wearing it on my little pink scooter as I drive around Exeter this spring. So far, I've just been wearing it around town, getting many compliments, and it really is buttery soft, real leather. It is fantastic.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/crime for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
Wow.
That's Quince.com/crime to get free shipping and 365-day returns. So if it leap year...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
that's
you're,
right.
You're out of luck.
That's
then,
right. It's clothes that begin with the letter Q, Alex.
Quince.com/crime.
Crime. Kevin.
Yeah.
Why was Girls Gone Wild so successful?
One word. Behooves. Well, you know, that's actually an interesting thing. We do talk about that in the podcast. They were talking about, well, this was before internet porn. No, it was internet porn. But
not like there is now.
No, not like there is now. There wasn't a...
there wasn't Pornhub. There wasn't porn.
Until you had YouTube and the video platforms like that, you couldn't get... films, but you certainly could get all sorts of other stuff. But I mean, that's sort of beside the point. there are a couple of, I mean, I think a couple of reasons. There is this, I think, this appeal to men, how they want to be in the middle of that party, right? And the fact that they might see not glamorous mega models or supermodels, but regular women all of a sudden acting very sexy and doing things that are supposed to be forbidden. There's something very tantalizing about that.
Well, she posits the idea that, like, he can walk up to someone and say, take off your shirt, and they will. But, like, the losers,
but a guy can't.
The
a regular
losers
guy.
At yeah. home who would want to watch this know that they would never be able to get that, right?
Right.
Which
right.
is also disgusting. It's all disgusting, but that's the fantasy. That's a disgusting fantasy. Right,
right. But it's also, you know, the setting. It isn't like they're on a film studio or, you know, in front of a backdrop and a woman comes on in front of the scrim and shows her boobs and walks off. It's the fact that it's like, it's outside and it's the middle of this party and it's on a bus and it has a sort of noir sleaziness to it that it's like you're just distant enough away from it that you're not part of it, but you're able to enjoy the lascivious nature of it.
Laura, these Girls Gone Wild ads were as prevalent at the time as those Camp Lejeune ads are right now, right?
Oh my God, the Camp Lejeune ads and emails. I get text messages.
I know.
Yes. And this was a period, it was like the late 90s, early 2000s. So I graduated college in 98. These things, that whole period, it was like every time you turned on the news, and if you're watching like late night TV, Girls Gone Wild. I mean, it was like all over the place. I mean, it was just part of the culture at that time. So to me, like hearing this and hearing the story behind it really resonated because it was something I was just so familiar with. And, you know, I went on spring break when I was in college. I went to like Daytona Beach or something.
I did.
Wow. It wasn't that wild, but
I went to Fort Lauderdale.
Like,
didn't see any boobs.
I didn't get a shirt. I didn't see any boobs. But it was like, I think part of what like Kevin was saying before is like, Rebecca looks so shocked.
I always wonder like who paid for these spring break trips for these college people? I always wonder that. Like,
I don't even know how I
how
got
did you
there.
Go, Kevin? Who
remember.
Paid for yours?
I saved up for the flight.
Good for you.
I had a friend who lived in Florida.
We went to his place. We just had to get our flights
That's
on.
Why you didn't see any boobs, because you were staying at your friend's house.
Oh, I forgot. We went to the Club Pink Pussycat. But that was different, yeah.
Yeah, it was gross, though. I do know how I got there. It's coming back to me now. My dad had a house in Florida at that time, and so I went and saw him for part of the week, and then I went to see my friends.
So you got your dad to pay for it under the guise of a, quote, visit.
Yeah, and he gave me some cash when I went. But I remember going to this club, and it was just gross. It was like a freaking meat market. But that's basically the allure of the Girls Gone Wild videos, is being in that scene and being in that setting and, you know, having that fly on the wall view of what's going to happen there late night. And it's not really happening because they're orchestrating it. And it's also, you know, when you think about that, like that period again, like that late 90s, early 2000s, and you look at now, I mean, that was sort of like the last hurrah, I think, of that sort of, you know, although I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was a different time.
I want to talk about a character in this podcast. And Toby, I'm going to start with you because I have not even Googled it, but I am certain that somebody who in this story is framed as like a little bit of a hero is actually probably like not in other stories that we could probably cover on this podcast. And that's Mayor Lee Sullivan, who happily admits that he was ousted as sheriff for like some sort of like law enforcement misconduct situation, right? And then runs for mayor because he was angry for having been fired as the sheriff. I didn't even Google it, but you know there's some shady fucking shit going on there, right? He is like one of these larger than life, like, you want to like just like typecast, like what's the dude from Dukes of Hazzard, right?
Boss Hogg.
Unbelievable. Like the way he talks, the way he sort of like brags about his escapades. What are your impressions of this lovely gentleman, Toby?
Like it's great when it's on Dukes of Hazzard. When it's in the real world, I think it's a little more troubling.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that guy just seems like an ass. You know, he gets elected mayor and then like fires a guy who's hired as police chief after him just because he can. Yeah, the guy seems like a nightmare.
He does. What did you think of him, Kevin?
Oh, I loved him.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would, you know, want to work for him, but he is funny and profane and he knows it. He knows he's, you know, funny to listen to. He's worth the price of admission, I think, Laura, because he just...
I agree.
I mean, he's also, look, he's not just fluff. He's an important character in the story here of the law enforcement and public safety response to this guy coming to Panama City Beach. It was an important part of that. But he's just so enjoyable to listen to him talking about Joe Francis as a shit stain, because it's almost like you need a big personality to go after a big personality. And he just, you know, let loose. I loved it.
Lady, when you flush the Joe Francis toilet, there's just all kinds of stains left in the toilet. It's just, listen, once he started swirling around and around and going down, it's just nothing for him to hold on to. Just a filthy little shit that he was.
I wish I could remember that saying. It was like, I'll tie your hands up so fast. Like, what? He's had some hysterical sayings. I'm like, I need to write these down. Some of his expressions.
Well, he's had some ethics charges. It took me one Google search to find that out.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I don't know. The glee. I don't know. There's just like a glee aspect to it. Like, I appreciate his like wanting to do something about this, but just sort of like the heavy-handed glee. Like, listen, Joe Francis is obviously a piece of shit, but like the tactics of overcharging Joe Francis, all I can imagine is like, what does he do to other people? Like, my mind goes immediately there. I can't help it. Especially having just
preying on underage girls.
Especially just having listened to Bone Valley. Like, he didn't charge him for preying on underage girls.
They couldn't make that stick, no.
But it's also like Lee Sullivan was just like, what did he say? You can, what did he say about the Main Street? A great expression about this. Like, you can do something on Main Street. You can have choir practice on Main Street. He was talking about like what you can't, basically meaning like you can't have nudity, but you can like, you know what I mean? Like, what bothers him more was like the aesthetics of the city. You know what I mean? Like, being bested bothers him more than whatever Joe Francis was actually doing in the privacy of a room. It was very clear to me anyway. I don't know. Not my favorite.
He's a bully with a badge.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But yeah, he does make for good tape. I guess there's that always.
Also, what the fuck with Kim Kardashian?
Well,
free Joe.
Yeah, well, they grew up together, man. These were like rich kids. We can't forget that Joe Francis was not a self-made man. He was a rich kid.
Laguna Beach, need I say more?
Exactly, exactly. So Joe Francis also had an interaction with Steve Wynn. What'd you think about that, Toby?
Yeah, they can have each other. It did seem like a classic sort of big fish eats little fish story. Where it's like, I have no idea what Joe Francis is thinking, like running up a big tab at one of Wynn's casinos and not paying. It's like, do you honestly think you're going to get away with that? And then he's like whining about how Steve Wynn was saying he's going to have him killed. I'd like to have some sympathy for you, but what the hell do you think is going to happen? Like, I don't necessarily think Wynn actually sent Quincy Jones an email saying, I'm going to kill Joe Francis. That doesn't seem to make much sense to me. But the idea that a guy who owns is like one of the biggest casino owners in the world has ways of getting money from people who aren't going to pay back their gambling debts. Like, how can you be surprised by that?
Of course he does.
It's just fucking ridiculous.
I wouldn't be surprised if
he sent
that email,
Toby. $2 million. Like, you've got it. Just pay your gambling debts. Move on with your life. Instead, you live down in Mexico. We have the Kardashians come and visit. And, you know, you talk to Bubba the Love Sponge. Last seen having sex on camera with Hulk Hogan's wife and complain about
your
situation.
You know a lot about this. Good for you, Toby.
Well, you know, because who else has fled to Mexico? Didn't Bikram initially flee to Mexico?
Yes. And so did Keith Raniere also went to Mexico.
And Olivia Newton-John's boyfriend.
Listen, I know from my research that it's very easy to emigrate to Mexico, from my own research about places that I would potentially flee to. It's an easy place.
Operation Escape Hatch.
It's an easy place to emigrate from the United States. They let you bring your dogs and you can bring a car. And the property taxes are extremely low. The property tax rate is like 0.75%.
Okay.
So I've looked into this completely. It's like a lovely place to emigrate to. So, Kevin, I will see you soon.
All right. You just don't have your own private plane to get there.
That's true. That's true. By the way, you haven't known about this. People do own their own private jets. It's not, they don't all lease them. People do own them. They're just a very stupid thing to own. They're stupid to own, but people do own them. You're like, I know, but you're right. Most people lease them.
But then he's like, we're taking up this whole floor of the Holiday Inn. You know, it's like, well, I think he was flexing a little bit.
That's what they have at Panama City Beach, is a Holiday Inn. It's a high-rise hotel. There's also a gorgeous Holiday Inn on the beach in Aruba, by the way. Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's been there since the 60s.
Yep. All right.
Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Scramble through our world-class golf courses or shop your way through the square. Be one with nature as you hike or bike through our parks and trails or hunker down at one of our breweries. And when it's time to eat, be sure to bite into our eclectic food scene. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
Tired of fighting your kids to make their bed? Say hello to Betty's. The unique design lets your kids make their bed with just a zip. Our patented bedding includes everything you need, a fitted sheet, top sheet, and comforter in one seamless piece that zips together. Kids love the feeling of accomplishment when they can make their bed by themselves every day. Make your mornings easier and visit Betty's.com. That's BEDDYS.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
All right, let's do what we do. Let's let our listeners know, should they check out the podcast Infamous, Girls Gone Wild? What do you think, Laura Bricker? Thumbs up or thumbs down for this podcast?
Yeah, I would say check this out. It is the proper balance of being entertaining, salacious, and also kind of doing a retrospective look at the way things were then and the way they are now, and you know, really kind of shedding light on this guy. And for somebody that, you know, a kid of the late 90s in this era, I was really interested to hear the other side of the story, because all I saw was those ads that were on incessantly during this period for the videos. And now I know the whole story. So, and you know, the other thing that was great about this is it was the right length. Mm. And we talked about that. And I think I finished this, I walked my new neighborhood and I listened to this, and it was the right length for a couple morning walks, and really interesting.
Toby Ball, what do you think? Thumbs up or thumbs down for Infamous, Girls Gone Wild?
Yeah, I was going to lead with what Lara said, which is it's the right length. It's a good story. She tells it for the length that it deserves. You know, it's looking back at sort of a pretty seamy thing that was going on like 20 years ago, I guess. I mean, was it really 20 years? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think it's super interesting. It's kind of based around this one incident, but sort of the way she kind of builds it out, so you kind of have some context. You hear more about Francis and kind of his origins and then where he is now. So yeah, I give it a thumbs up.
Kevin Flynn.
Yeah, I'm going to go a thumbs up too. This was entertaining. We didn't actually get to the talk about the use of an actor in place of Joe Francis, but we don't get the actual Joe Francis. We do get two very colorful characters in this. And in a way, Vanessa, the host, is a character herself, having, I should say, recalling her own experiences covering the story. It told something a little more. And, you know, in the end, we also find out a little more about Joe Francis today. And it's just as enraging as his show us your boobs, you know, money making venture. So a good, entertaining listen. And everybody's right. It's just, it was the right length. It ended when it was supposed to end, and it get dragged along for another three episodes for no reason.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kevin. It's thumbs up for me. It's not perfect. I didn't love the use of the actor, even though we were very transparent about it. I think that Vanessa talking about what happened was probably enough. And I think Vanessa recalling her own reporting is actually, it sounds like she's done a lot of very interesting, very juicy reporting. And there's probably a lot to mine there. And her voice and the way she delivered this was just so much more organic and natural. And I don't mean her physical voice. I mean her writing voice. And her just leaning into the story just sounded so much more organic and like what she's supposed to be doing, more so than Run Bambi Run, I thought, which is the other podcast that we reviewed of hers. My only other issue with this podcast is there is a recreated "this is how it must have happened or could have happened" scene. And that's just not my favorite kind of thing, when like "it may have happened this way" kind of thing. You know, I just don't think it's necessary. You can just sort of say, here's what the court paper said or whatever kind of thing. But other than that, I really did enjoy this listen too. And as everyone has said, it's like a nice little nugget Episodes don't have to be long just to fill ad spots, like make them as long as they need to be and then stick your ads in there and then put another narrator in doing a different story. I really love the format. All right, that's going to do it for us. But before we go, Laura Bricker, do we have a cat of the week this week?
We do. Hold on a minute. I'm going to pull it up. And it is, actually, it's not a cat of the week. It is a hamster.
A hamster?
I don't know. Is this a hamster or a guinea pig? Is it a hamster or a guinea pig? I'm not really sure. So this week we have hamster or guinea pig. I'm not really sure.
A rodent of some kind.
They come to us from Liz, and they were actually winners last year. Bean made the cut last year with his ugly Christmas sweater. He now has a new brother, Ponchito, and they both have new Christmas sweaters, and they are freaking adorable.
Wow.
And I would get a little rodent just so I could dress them up like this. So thank you, Liz, for submitting.
How do you even put like a sweater on one of those animals?
I don't know.
How do you do that? I can't even imagine like doing those tiny little arms, like putting in those little holes. I don't know. Laura Bricker, if folks want to send you any kind of animal, obviously to be cat of the week, of course, they can email to them to us at crimewriterson@gmail.com. But what if they want to send them to you online? How can they find you on social media?
They can find me at Laura Bricker.
What about you, Toby? How can you be found on social media?
At TobyBallNH.
What about you, Kevin Flynn? How can you be found?
I can be found at Kevin P. Flynn.
And if you want to find me everywhere, like Twitter or Instagram, for example, you can find me at Reb Lavoie. You can follow the show at Crime Writers On, and please join our incredible community in our official Crime Writers On Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, find our page, hit join the group. We'll let you in. Support the show at patreon.com/partnersincrimemedia. You'll get all the podcasts we make there. There's so much stuff back there. Our theme song was composed and performed by Ty Gibbons. Our line editor is the incredible Olivia Burdett. The executive producer of this program is Kevin Flynn. This show was recorded in a yoga loft above the bodega in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi studio, otherwise known as Studio C, the closet in our New Hampshire basement, where Toby and Kevin will show you their nipples for a measly t-shirt. On behalf of all the crime writers, thanks
Look
so much
this.
For listening. Ew. We will catch you later. You should see the unbelievable fat squirrel that we have on our deck. It's the fattest squirrel I've ever seen. It looks like, I don't like fat shaming anybody. This squirrel looks like he ate another squirrel like 5 minutes ago.
Oh, I fat shame Pippin all the time.
Look at how fucking fat this squirrel is, guys.
Yeah, I saw those fat ass squirrels on Twitter.
Is it? It's just the same one. He's so fat. I saw him and it was like, he looks like a pig. Like his body is so much bigger than his head.
Oh my God, what's wrong with him?
I don't know.
It's like a mutant.
He couldn't get to my, and he wasn't even at my bird feeder because he was sitting in front of my bird feeder, but he can't get to it because like out on a string.
That squirrel has insulin resistance.
That squirrel is fat. It's so cute. Okay.
Saying that squirrel is so big, he needs to sleep with a CPAP.
In crime media. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.